You're listening to the Live Happier Longer podcast,
episode 59.
Welcome to the Live Happier Longer podcast. We're your hosts, Molly Watts
and Angela McDade. We are here to help you build the 5 habits of a happier, longer life
and to create your habit mindset, starting now. This episode is brought to you by the 5 for Life Planner and the 30-Day Ultimate Habit Building System. We are so excited to have you join us in January 2020 for our very first 30-Day Habit Building Challenge.
Because we all know how important habits are.
Yeah, they're not resolutions that are broken before you've even set them.
Yeah, because it's the quality of your habits that determine the quality of your life.
Absolutely. So whether it's health, career, relationships, you name it, our system is customizable, repeatable, and designed to help you succeed. So go to shop.5forlife.co. That's shop.5forlife.co. Click on the 30-Day Ultimate Habit Building System to learn more. Hey, Angela.
Hey, Molly.
How are ya?
I'm well.
Excellent. Did you have a very nice Thanksgiving?
I did. We had a 50% here. The other 50% at least were together, which was nice.
2 out of 4? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Well, we had 4 out of 4, so I'm a straight gold star over
so
here in the
bonus.
Watts household. It was really nice, though, to have all the boys home. It was the first time in a long time, as people, if they've listened, know. And now we've rolled right into December.
I'm not really
a big fan of that late Thanksgiving, I will say.
Yeah, I quite like it, actually.
Really?
I like it because then it's like, because Thanksgiving is right? So good, and then it's Christmas, and
it's almost here. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's cold here in Oregon.
Yes.
That crisp air really wakes you up.
Yeah. But I still have that breath because I was out today and it's really cold. Burns your lungs when you're breathing.
But yes, always have to talk about the weather.
That's just the weather report here. Moving on.
Yep. So today on the podcast, we are super excited to be talking to Sky Bergman, who is she's a professor of film and video at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
Mm-hmm.
But she has produced and directed a film documentary called Lives Well Lived.
Yeah, and it only reinforces all of the things that we talk about here on how to live a happier, longer life. And it's right there. These elders are all, they're talking the talk and walking the walk, and it's so nice to see it.
Yeah, and it was inspired by her grandma, who passed away at 103.5.
Yes, 103.5.
After the film was finished, but you know, she was working out still at the gym at, you know, at 100.
Yeah.
So, I mean, daily action number one move, right?
Yeah.
Here is our conversation with Sky Bergman. Hi, Sky.
Hi, Sky.
Hi, Molly and Angela. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. We loved the film.
Yeah.
We loved watching it. And of course, if you're familiar at all with with the podcast called Live Happier Longer, it makes sense that we're pretty aligned with a message of living lives well lived.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that this project was a passion project for you, kind of like 5 for Life is a passion project for us, and inspired by your grandmother.
It was. I'm so lucky that my grandmother lived long enough for me to really appreciate her. And she lived to be 103.5. And when she came out here for the first time to visit me, she lived in Florida and I live in California. She came out to visit me for the first time when she was 96. And for the next 4 summers, she came and spent the month of August with me, which if you've ever been in Florida in August, you know, was a very wise decision to escape Florida. And she was an amazing cook. That was the way that she showed people her love, was through her cooking. And I realized that I really wanted to capture that. I had never really spent the time to capture that. I'd spent time with her in the kitchen, but I didn't know any of her recipes. She never wrote a recipe down. And so I started videoing her in the kitchen. And that was really how this whole thing started, was my love of my grandmother and wanting to capture that and capture her essence, I suppose. And when she was turning 99 or turning 100, she was 99, turning 100, she was working out at the gym. And I thought I'd better film this because nobody's going to believe that at almost 100, she's still working out at the gym. And I just as a throwaway comment said to her, "Grandma, can you give me some words of wisdom?" And that was truly the beginning of this film. And I was approaching 50 and thinking about what I wanted the rest of my life to look like. And, you know, I was looking for other people that were role models out there, like my grandmother was to me. And I sent an email blast out to my friends, family, and alum. And I said, "Here's this little 1 minute video clip that I put together of my grandmother working out at the gym at 99, almost 100. And if you have somebody in your life that's as much an inspiration as my grandmother is to me, then please nominate them for this project." And the heartwarming thing was I was just inundated with nominations. I mean, it was just so lovely. So that was really how it all began.
Yeah, and that was the thing about the movie, was the variety of people and the different backgrounds. And they all had a different story, but it was the same. Well, they obviously all grew up in a time of hardship, just simply because of when they were born. And despite all of that, they were just amazing people. And it was so inspiring to listen to them speak. And it was just lovely. And as I say, just that range of people and what they did with their life, it was so interesting.
Well, sure. I think one of the things that comes through in the film is that there's a resiliency that these people have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I always say that there are three things that people had in common that I interviewed, because everybody wants to know, well, what's the secret, right? What's the thing that people had in common? And I would say the first one is that they all had something that they wanted to learn every day or do every day. There was some reason that they got up every day. And the second thing was that they were surrounded by a good group of either friends or family. And the interesting thing was it didn't necessarily have to be family. It could be friends, but they were not isolated. They were socially involved with other people. And then I think the third thing is kind of what we were talking about before, was this resiliency and the ability to see life as a glass is half full rather than half empty. I mean, even in the midst of some of the greatest challenges, the people that I interviewed were still incredibly positive in a way that, you know, everybody gets up on the wrong side of the bed every once in a while. And that certainly happens to me. And I think of these people and their stories and how they overcame those obstacles, and the things that get me upset all of a sudden don't. I kind of look at it in a different light and change my attitude very quickly. And I think that really is because I worked on the film and had the advantage of listening to all those people and really absorbing that. And so that resiliency is something that's so incredibly important.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, not funny. It's actually, we spoke with Dr. Emily Rogalski. She's from Northwestern University, doing a huge multi-year study on super agers. And these are people that are biologically older, but mm-hmm. actually physically appear younger in their brain activity.
Yeah.
And one of the common traits there as well was this resilient spirit. And so it's not just, you know, there's science there somewhere, right? In mm-hmm. what these people and all of their shared, very diverse backgrounds, but just like you said, these common threads. I mean, they have not only aged to an old age, but they've done it with amazing attitude and an optimism and grace that is not necessarily widespread, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they are very inspirational for that reason.
Well, I think, like I said, because I was approaching 50 and I wanted positive role models of what my life could be like in the next half of my life. And so, you know, I went out in search of people that were inspiring. And so I think that's what you're seeing in the film. You're not seeing, you know, a cross section of everyone that's 75 and older. You're really seeing the people, I think, that are the inspiring ones. And the interesting thing is that it really, it was not necessarily, not everybody was in the best of health. I think it was much more about their mental health than about their physical health. I think that that was far more important. In fact, my dad was part of the whole project. He's had several strokes, and the last stroke left him pretty much in a wheelchair, but he's still a practicing geriatric physician, even though he can't mostly use the left side of his body. And he is far more grateful now for the things that he can do than he ever has been in his life. And I think instead of becoming very resentful, he looks at the things that he still can do with a great deal of satisfaction. And that, for me, is a great role model. You know, that
absolutely. It,
again, it's not really necessarily, because we are all physically going to decline in some way. That is just the way that it is. But how do you move beyond that and keep you mentally, keep you in a place where you're still wanting to learn and where you're still wanting to grow and you're still wanting to be involved and engaged?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's obviously, you know, that's a big part of what we talk about all the time. Our whole project was inspired by my dad, who is about to turn 92. Like, all of a sudden I was like, 92. I keep saying he's 92. He's not quite there yet. And the same thing, kind of where he, the differences in, how he aged as opposed to how other people in my life aged, and just, he has had health issues and he has had challenges, but the things that he has done consistently over time. And I think that we saw so many of them in the people that you interviewed. The first one we call our daily habit number one is move. And, you know, every single, I think most all of the people that were in the film talked about going out, going just for a walk, you know, and continuing to move. I mean, there was dancing, there was, a lot of people, you know, a lot of them were very much into continuing to move, you know?
Right. Well, my grandmother had a saying that she said, move it or lose it. And I so agree with that. And the other thing is that my grandmother did not start going to the gym until she was 80. So I always say,
right?
It's never too late to start going to the gym or just start getting involved in something. And, you know, my passion is yoga, but it doesn't matter what it is. As long as you do something every day, I think that that's the important thing.
Absolutely. 100%. And it's not only allegorically through the stories that you've told and what we talk about it, but it's actually, again, proven by science to help you increase your mobility, increase your longevity, and also your overall attitude, because if it's good for your heart, it's good for your brain. And, you know, there's everything so interlinked. So it's an important, you know, it was fun to see people doing what we know, you know, helps people create that attitude of optimism, right? Because if you're still able to move and you feel good, it's easier to have an optimistic attitude.
I totally agree. I mean, and even, like I said, my dad, who's pretty much in a wheelchair, but, you know, he still gets around, he still visits his patients, he still is practicing, he's doing what he can. And I think that that's really important, that you do what you can with what you have. And, you know, and keeping, remaining optimistic and remaining wanting to do and wanting to participate, I think is really key.
I was really interested in the fact that I noted that a lot of them commented on starting new things or learning new things during midlife at age 50 or 50 plus, or, you know, things that they had not done, starting sculpting until he was 40. I mean, things that they really, you know,
And painting, actually a lot of artistic
things. And a lot of artistic and creative outlets, quilting and, you know, just a lot of, but I was very interested. And I don't know if that was direction from you or questions, because you were, you know, in midlife at that time. So asking, you know, what did you do? But I think it's a good lesson for people as well. We always talk about that with our audience, is that this is an opportune time to start. You know, you've taken care of your kids, you've, you know, done all this. It's a great time to start exploring new things, and that whole attitude of learning. I mean, that's our daily habit number two, is going out and trying these new things, because it really does help create that optimism for you.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Yeah.
And one of the, I can't remember who it was that said it, you're never too old to start anything. But she said when her kids were grown up, it was too soon because she was so busy looking after her kids. But then once they were grown, like the time was now, and that was when she was in that midlife. So
yeah,
there is a right time for it.
Yes, and it's, when she went to learn French in France. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that was Evie. Yeah, and Marianne, who's in the film, she's 89, almost 90 now, and she's learning to play guitar for the first time.
Oh, so, wow!
You know, I think that that's part of that spirit and that wanting to learn something new every day is what keeps people mentally engaged and wanting to get up every day and mm-hmm. wanting to, that excitement, you know, of learning something new. I think if we can always have that excitement, it just makes life so much better and so much fuller, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I don't think you weren't looking at this through a scientific lens that we do. We do it both kind of inspirationally and through that science lens. But the three things that people fear most about aging are loss of mobility, cognitive decline, and loneliness and isolation. And you kind of hit, like I said, our top three daily habits are move, learn, and share. And that share is all about staying engaged.
Yeah.
And you kind of mentioned that as being something that was fundamentally a part of all of these people's lives.
Absolutely. And I think that they all wanted to give back in some way. And, you know, they're all people that are doing things like Evie, who is a woman that was 50 and yep. learning going French. To France. Yep. She's part of the League of Women Voters, and she's going to high schools and trying to get students to register and pre-register to vote. And so she's almost every day, she's at a different high school. And Marion and Paul Wolf go around to high schools and talk about their experience during the Holocaust. Rose Albano Ballestero, who's in her 80s now, gets up every morning and goes and helps the ESL students because she was an ESL student when she was growing up. And so, you know, they're all still doing these things. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what keeps them feeling vital. We all want to feel like we have a purpose in life and like there's something that we're giving back in some way that we're contributing. And so I think that common thread is really important. Lou Tadone, he's still making his mozzarellas every day and he's 90.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my goodness. That
was Mutsies. Yes.
So. Mutsies, yeah. Loved him. Loved that.
And it looked really good.
It did look really good on top of it all.
He's so wonderful. I am friends with all these people. I mean, I always say that my grandmother left me the greatest legacy, which is that I now have 40 new grandparents.
Yeah.
And that all really do watch out for me. I mean, we were at Marion and Paul's for Thanksgiving dinner. Lucky Louie, who's the mozzarella maker, I have to go visit him once a week. If I don't, I get an email from him asking if I'm okay. Oh, and actually last week when I was sick and not feeling well, I emailed him to say, I'm not going to be there this week because I'm just not feeling well. Do you know that there was a mozzarella and a thing of chicken soup on my front porch?
Oh from my gosh.
So my 96-year-old friend was dropping off chicken soup for me, which I mean, I love that. I think that that's having friends of all different ages, I think, is so important. And my grandmother always used to say, I would say to her, what's your secret? She said, make sure you have younger friends. And I think that for me, it's make sure I have younger friends, but also make sure I have older friends too. Mm-hmm. And I think that having friends of all different ages is so important in terms of your life and having a fuller life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think is really important about the film and about kind of what our message is too, that we always want to really make sure people hear, is that all of these things are available to you every day. And it's really truly every single person that you interviewed, it boiled down to a choice that they mm-hmm. made to how, you know, no matter what that resiliency, but their attitude was, you know, they chose how they wanted to live their lives. And it's like, you know, you can walk around, and Angela and I were just talking about mm-hmm. this yesterday, you know, the things that you think you can add to your own suffering, or you can frame your life in a way that you're always grateful for things, you know, mm-hmm. and it's, that's our daily action number four, actually give is gratitude. And it was really a thread too, throughout all of those people that you spoke to.
Absolutely. I think that that practice of gratitude is really important. And I think that, to, you know, one of the things that I really learned from doing the film And I think it was Blanche Brown that said it, that hit for me was, you know, really to live in the moment. And I find myself, for me, what that means is stopping, looking around, and just taking that moment in and being so grateful for it. And it, sometimes it's a sunset. Sometimes it's being in a screening and I'm surrounded by 200 people who are all watching the film who are so inspired by it. Sometimes it's being in the classroom with my students. But at least a few times a day, I try and take that moment to just go, wow, this is amazing and I need to remember this and just take it in. And I think we're so busy in our lives with our phones. And, you know, I see my students always looking down at their phone. And I'm like, put them away, just enjoy each other and really be more present. And I think that that's something that we have lost a little bit. And if we could all have that practice of gratitude and take that moment to just breathe it in, I think the world would be a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We recently spoke to John Leland. He's New York Times.
He's a friend of mine.
Oh, is he? All right. Yeah. Awesome. So, you know, John, John, we just recently, interviewed John and about his book, A Year Among the Oldest Old, Happiness is a Choice. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is just kind of what I was saying. But one of the elders said, you know, that to really understand just how truly amazing life is at every moment, it's something that each and every one of us can do.
Yeah, you don't need any special skills. No. You don't need to be rich or poor, right. Or it doesn't matter, famous or, you know, nothing. Mm-hmm.
It's always there. And it sounds, to some people, it sounds like really woo-woo, like, oh, you know, positive thinking, etc. But I think that that's been something that for us, definitely along this path, learning and speaking to the people that we've gotten to talk to, it is something that people who age with optimism, who live lives well-lived, who live successfully, they embrace that and they make it a part of their daily mm-hmm. lives.
Absolutely. And I would say, you know, one of my passions now has been doing intergenerational projects with the film mm-hmm. and screening the film. Where there are elders and students, either high school or college students, that watch the film together. And then we've formed projects based around that, where they'll interview each other and then kind of culminate at the end of a quarter or semester with a big wrap party where they do presentations. And one of the reasons that I am really interested in that is because I think that we have lost that connection to our elders. I mean, I was lucky enough to grow up with my grandparents and see that. But one of the things that I learned in doing the research for the film is that the last 100 years is the first time in human history that we've looked to anyone other than our elders for advice. And I really feel the world is suffering as a result. And so whatever I can do to connect the generations, I think is so vitally important because, you know, it's like anything else. If you know somebody who's older or younger, you know, all of a sudden those biases kind of disappear because you meet people one-on-one. And the students that I worked with, many of them didn't have grandparents or elders that they had, you know, in their lives. And they would come up to me and say, thank you so much. I had no idea. And they learned so much just by taking that time to talk to somebody that was older than them and get a different perspective and a different take on life. And I know what it did for me interviewing 40 people. So I'm, you know, I feel like in some small way I'm combating ageism, like one story and one connection at a time. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it has to start, you know, the more personal, the more universal. And sometimes it has to start at that very ground, that very small step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel kind of like I've lived under a rock, but I've never heard that. The more personal, the more universal. And I love it. So yes, I think that, I mean, combating ageism is an important topic.
I think going forward, it's something that really, because we are getting older as a nation in general, and it's something we obviously have to, you know, look address. At as a realistic thing. So I think that in and of itself is something that needs to be addressed, as you say. But again, like, me, for instance, my parents and my husband's parents are in Scotland, so we see them, now and again. So my kids don't have grandparents that are right here. And especially in the US, it's so big that people don't live in the same place anymore. Like my hometown in Scotland, my sisters are all, you know, within miles of each other, and they see my parents all the time. You know, it's a very small place, but the US in particular is so big that people just don't have the, it's like a geographical connection, mm-hmm. never mind any other, you know, yeah. personal connection.
That's true.
So, you know, do it like those projects that you're doing where you're connecting people, it just sounds, it's an opportunity that people, like young people, wouldn't necessarily have. And to a certain extent, some of the elders wouldn't either, because some of their family have gone. So it sounds like a really nice, it's a win-win situation for everybody.
For sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So tell me more about, in terms of, so that's one area that you're hoping to use the film for good, is mm-hmm. Influencing kind of that conversation and intergenerational. From the get-go, did you have, what were your goals? I mean, what was your, so you started off, you know, you were talking to your grandmother, she had some words of wisdom to share, you got this idea, and suddenly you've got an award-winning documentary. You know, I know you're, yeah. You're a film teacher, so it's not exactly out of your realm, but
well, actually I was a still photography teacher. I'd never done any video until I did the video of my grandmother cooking in the kitchen. And I mean, I'd done a lot, so I do have a photography background,
but photography, not film. Okay, but not film. Yeah. Okay,
and it's very, very different. We have a motto at my school. I teach at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, and our motto is learn by doing. And the whole project has been that, because when I started it, I really thought it might just be this web series. I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with it. I just knew I had to do it. And when I interviewed Marion Wolfe, who she came over on the very first Kinder transport from Vienna, Austria in the UK. They were trying to save as many kids as they could. And so they were taking kids in from Germany and Austria.
And away from their parents, right? Mm-hmm. Away from their mother.
Parents, yeah. And they saved 10,000 kids, which is pretty remarkable. And she was one of them. And I had never heard that story. And to hear it firsthand, and she still had the cardboard number that they put around her neck at the age of 8. And there was something about that I think was a pivot moment for me, that I realized this had to be a feature-length film. Although I'd never done anything like this before, for some reason I thought that was the way that I could get these stories out in a bigger way than just doing a web series. And at that moment, I looked at making sure that I had a diverse group of people that I was interviewing. Like, you know, I sought out somebody that was Japanese American.
Right.
So I have the story of Susie Edo Bauman, who was interned during World War II. And, you know, made sure that it wasn't just about, that all happened over in Europe. It's like, let's remember what we did in our own country so that perhaps we can learn from our history and not repeat those same mistakes. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that, you know, it started out, I was collecting the words of wisdom of all these people, but then I kind of also realized that I was also collecting their history, and that some of that was going to be lost unless we collected it. And so one of the things that I am hope for the film is that it becomes a catalyst for people to collect the stories of their loved ones. And on the website for the film, there's a place where people can go and share people's stories. And I asked everyone about the same like 23 questions. I put about 10 of those questions up on the website, because I think the hardest thing when you're talking about interviewing somebody is knowing where to start. Like, you say, oh, tell me about yourself. And that's such a wide open-ended question that it just makes it a little difficult. So I gave people kind of a framework of, here's how you can start, and here are some questions that you can use. For example, one of the questions is, what do you think of your own mortality? And I remember asking my dad that question. And I think as a daughter, I might've had a harder time asking that question, but because I was doing it in the context of it being an interview, mm-hmm. It was a little easier, and it was a great conversation that we had. And we would never have had that conversation otherwise. And I think that's something we never talk about that in our society. We always, for some reason, that's like the thing, but it's so important to talk about that. And you know, so having that frame of questions, I think, is really a good starting point. So that's another goal for the project, is to help people collect the stories of their loved ones. And I know that that's happening because I get emails every day from people that say, wow, I went back and it was, you know, Thanksgiving and I interviewed my grandparents and I wouldn't have otherwise. And, you know, so that's really heartwarming. That's great.
For sure. I love that. I love that just piece of engagement, because that's really, I mean, that is taking it to a personal level and helping people have difficult conversations or just learning, just like you said, from the history from their elders, which we so often miss out on. So tell me about the release of the film and how I know that you have screenings, people can submit for screenings. Tell me a little bit more about what, if people are wanting to know more, tell me about that.
Yeah. So thank you for asking. We just released the DVD, kind of a soft release to our email list and people that know about us. We're not doing a mass marketing at this point, because the whole film has been word of mouth. I mean, everything that's happened has been from people spreading mm-hmm. the word about the film. And then we've been doing, we had a theatrical release, and now we're doing community and educational screening. So people can email and you know, request a community or educational screening. And we've been doing them all over the country. So at this point, we've had between all of our screenings, we've screened in over 200 cities across the country and across Canada. And it just keeps going. I mean, I'm always amazed. Every day there's something new that comes in, that somebody has some request for the film. I thought it would slow down, but it has not, because I think the film is an evergreen film and it's about mm-hmm. issues that we all are interested in. And so there's still the interest. And like I said, it's word of mouth. I've not put the call out really to anyone. It's all people saying, oh, I heard about your film and I really want to see it. And that's wonderful. I mean, for me, I haven't had to do any marketing at all,
right?
Because the film has marketed itself. And it's just, I mean, that's the wonderful thing, right? When you have something that people really want to see, that they want to tell their friends about it. When it played here in it's in our hometown in San Luis Obispo, but it played for 9 weeks at our theater here. And it was people coming back, seeing the film 2 and 3 times and bringing friends with them to see the film. Because I think that one of the beauties of the film is, since there are so many different people in the film, you might not connect with one person, but you're certainly going to connect with someone in the film. And so everybody has a favorite and it's different for everyone. And it also connects you to the people in your life, because one of the questions that I'll ask at the end of a screening is, how many people in the audience are thinking of somebody that would have been perfect for the film, or you would have been perfect for the film? And I would say almost 95% of the hands go up. You know, you're thinking at the end of the film about somebody that you love, that's in your life, that was an inspiration to you, and that you think would have been perfect for the film. And that's great. So if I've done just that, then that's enough, you know, and that's a wonderful gift.
Well, that's an awesome, I mean, it's not very often that we, you know, you find someone that's done a project like this, that's really wanting to have it just be out there for,
just because,
yeah, just for all the good, you know, for the good that it can do, and the conversations that can be had, and the learning that can accomplish. And, you know, I know that it's not a free will, you know, it didn't get created for free. So in any ways that people can help, I'm going to have you give us that information too at the end. There's a way for people to donate to help the film support as well. So, well, I just can't imagine how lucky you must feel in terms of the relationships and the connections that you've created. I know that, again, when we spoke with John Leland, I mean, he only had 6 and he had
Thanksgiving.
So yeah, he was very, and of course a few of his have now passed away because they were quite elderly, but,
but he said that he was spending Thanksgiving with one of his elders as well.
Who also she passed away not long after that, unfortunately, but,
I think that was Ping.
It was Ping. So 40, that must be a real keep life very entertaining. And
it does.
I know from his perspective, that was something
that was the greatest payback.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Unexpected. What was initially just an assignment, mm-hmm. and then even creating a book, the relationships that he had with all those elders were what was truly the gift.
Oh yeah, for me as well. And I certainly have had people that have passed away from the film as well. And you know, that's just the risk that you take, I think, when you're working with that population, but the benefits far outweigh the mm-hmm. risk. And I feel so honored to even have known all these people. And, you know, I just, what a gift it was for me, and what a nice legacy that I've left for them, for their families, mm-hmm. because with everyone that I interviewed, I, you know, transcribed all the interviews, and I gave the families the full interviews so that they would have them. And, you know, and there were stories that came out that they had never heard from their mm-hmm. parents. Wow. Siblings. And I think, you know, one of the interesting thing is one of the questions that I asked was, of all the people, do you have any regrets? And the biggest regret that people had was not asking questions of people that had passed away. And mm-hmm. I mean, that was a common sort of theme, was, oh, I wished I had asked this person or that person, you know, some more questions. And so I think that that's a really good lesson to learn, is that, like, if you have those questions and you have an elder, sit down with them and talk to them. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's so important. I remember I had on the first interviews that I did of Lucky Louie, the mozzarella man, and then this other name, on Ken Schwartz, I had a student assistant with me, and we had a little bite to eat after we had finished interviewing them, and he said, I didn't know that older people had so much to say. And I said to him, well, don't you have anyone that's older in your life? And he said, yeah, I have a grandfather, but he's really quiet. And I said, well, did you ever try and have a conversation with him? And he said, well, I don't know. I said, you know what? Take these questions. He was going home the next weekend, and sit down with him and just talk to him. And he came back from that trip and he was beaming. Like, his grandfather was so excited that he right. actually took an interest and sat down with him. But part of it was, they didn't know how to start the dialogue. They didn't know how to make it happen. He had to see that there were two other elders that were so, like, you know, talking, and he was so excited about it that it led him to opening up a relationship and a dialogue with his grandfather, which I just, you know, those are some wonderful things that came out of things like this. So
for sure. You said, I think 10 of them are on the website. Maybe get those.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them on the website, and I can certainly email you all the rest of them.
Yeah, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Link those, put those in our show notes. And so people can have that as a resource just so mm-hmm. they can do the same for that.
Absolutely.
Place.
So mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely.
So the website is, it's pretty simple, right?
It's lives-well-live.com, or you can just Google Lives Well Lived and it's the first thing that comes up.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. And the DVD is for sale on the website?
Yes, it's for sale on the website. And also, if you want to be inspired, if you go on the website to our Film Stars part of the page, all of the people that I interviewed, all 40 people are there, along with my favorite quotes from the film. So you can see a quote, 40 different quotes.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Well, we will link all of that, link to your social media as well, because I know that's all there on the website. So we'll put all of that in our show notes so that people can further connect with you, because I think that they'll want to. We thank you very much for letting us preview the film, because we really enjoyed it. And I know that other people will get a lot out of it, not just, I mean, enjoy it, of course, but get inspired to also live a life well lived.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Live Happier Longer podcast.
Now it's time to move,
learn,
share,
give,
and let go. 5 daily habits to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See you next week.